Hi, it's Michael Schneider, and thanks for listening to The Spinoff. Just like the critically acclaimed TV shows we discuss on The Spinoff, KCRW's storytelling podcast, Unfictional, is full of that raw human emotion that keeps us tuning in. It's got intimate stories and artful documentaries crafted by some of the most talented radio producers across the globe. So you ought to check it out. Find Unfictional on KCRW's iTunes page. From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Schneider of TV Guide Magazine, and this is The Spinoff. We're back with another bonus episode, this time with a conversation with super producer Mark Burnett. When I sat down with Burnett last week in Santa Monica as part of the Real Screen West conference, the plan was to have his wife and producing partner Roma Downey join us as well. Unfortunately, Downey was stuck at home sick with laryngitis, so Burnett and I chatted just the two of us. Burnett has an empire's worth of shows these days. He helped change the reality game in 2000 with Survivor, and 15 years later, that show is still going strong, along with Celebrity Apprentice, Shark Tank, and his reality singing contest, The Voice, which will continue next year and years after that, even as its competitor, American Idol, soon goes off the air. Burnett and Downey also work on scripted projects, and they're both very religious, which explains why they did the shows The Bible, a huge smash for the History Channel, and more recently, AD on NBC. For Burnett, his Christian religion is a driving force in how he runs his business and picks projects to pursue. We talked about all of this and more, but when we first sat down, I had to address something right away. Burnett had finally shaved his beard, a distinctive part of his look for the past few years.
First of all, Roma was complaining for weeks about my beard, and it got really, really to crazy, crazy proportions, like another show, an A&E show, Rob. I was about to be cat. Rob called me, put me on Duck Dynasty. I knew the beard was then too long. But I shaved it. But I knew when we did Jimmy Fallon, and Roma and Jimmy had bought 10 cents grey big beards and put them on during the Tonight Show, I knew that I'd gone so far, I'd become such a joke. So I was on the way back from Rome, where we were just filming Ben-Hur, and I decided to go into the bathroom and shave the giant beard off. It took me a dozen razors and an hour and a half, and I came out of the Lufthansa bathroom, and my wife looked at me like, "You're kidding, you chose the airline to show the beard."
You could have given that to as an exclusive to someone. You could have televised that. That could have been a special.
Yeah. Then you become really falsely self-important. It's like one thing having a joke about it, but what makes part of our business so stupid is people who think things like that would be valid. I mean, we're joking about it now, but to put yourself on TV, like, oh, guess what? I'm going to shave my beard off. Like, really?
I hate to say that I would actually watch that, but that's just me. You mentioned Ben-Hur, and obviously the clip ended with Ben-Hur. I mean, that's the epitome of this new direction that you're going. It's only been about 9 months now that you formed this new relationship with United Artists and MGM. But talk about that. I mean, big movie. This is the direction that your career is going. What can you tell us about Ben-Hur?
Well, first on that, you know, yes, I'm predominantly a reality TV producer. Everyone knows I hate the word reality, right? It's unscripted dramas is what I prefer, you know, but to go with the flow, a reality producer. But anybody in this room who's talented and has drive and is willing to fail can do anything. I mean, as evidence, 15 years ago this week, Survivor premiered, you know, and obviously it went on to change television as we know it, you know, and, you know, that's really... You got to know, Real Screen came out of shows like Survivor and The Apprentice in the early days and realizing there was a whole business. But it doesn't mean you're stuck just doing that. And yes, we are. We just wrapped this week. We wrapped Ben-Hur after 7 months of shooting in Rome. The chariot race alone was 38 days of principal photography just for the chariot race. We have an incredible cast with Jack Houston, Toby Kebbell, Morgan Freeman. And what's exciting about doing Ben-Hur, when you talk to kids who are under, let's say under 30, I say kids, but under 30, no one's even heard of Ben-Hur. It's so exciting. You know, like my own kids are pretty smart, 18, 19, 22. You're making a movie, Ben-Hur, Ben-Hur, and then we showed them some of the production design with the chariot racing, And our son Cameron said, "That's a great, unique idea. Chariot racing in a movie?" I said, "Cameron, I'm sorry, it's not that unique. It's been done. We're doing it again." But, you know, it's it looks great and comes out probably next February. And we're just about to start post. Everyone's coming back. We're able to complete production without any injuries to the animals. I mean, we had 85 prime horses under training. We had over a dozen chariots of in various forms. And every kind of camera from obviously the Aries right down to GoPros. It's going to be absolutely amazing.
Well, it's a big epic to sort of kick off this new relationship and really this new company that you're doing with MGM. Talk about this company, and obviously you're making a statement by calling it United Artists. We know the evolution, the origins of United Artists going back to Douglas Fairbanks and Barry Pickford, you know, sort of an artist-driven company. Why was it important to sort of dust off that label, but also this relationship? What are your expectations and hopes and dreams for UAMG?
You know, I've been pretty much a lone wolf. I mean, a lot of people at this show I've run into today have worked for me at some time before, who are now, you know, running channels or top level producers. And I think we've tended to turn out high quality people, but I've been pretty much a lone wolf, and so never had any partners, any debt. So in the last couple of years, I actually took in collaborations and partnerships, which has now ended up with merging all of our different shows under one banner. And now United Artists, there are four partners. The four partners are Roma Downey, Hearst Corporation, MGM, and Mark Burnett. And we're making all kinds of stuff, scripted series, unscripted series, feature films, with obviously Ben Hearst coming out. We just put out a movie called Little Boy. We got about three more movies on the go right now and several scripted series. And of course, yeah, we have 11 network, not cable, network TV series right now. And fortunately, it's been a very good, you know, few years for us, with Monday night's Voice is number one, Tuesday night's Voice is number one, Wednesday night's Survivor crushed American Idol, by the way. Doubled American Idol's ratings in demo and viewership. If you think about that, talk about enduring. And you know what the thing is there? Stick to what you believe in. Know that it's a gift to have a network TV show. I mean, cable as well, but a network TV show is, you better treat it like you're making Ben-Hur, like it's a $150 million movie, because you're in people's homes. And with Survivor, we keep it fresh every year. The game is great, and there's people watching Survivor who've only started in the last five seasons, and I think they discovered this brand new show. Like, it's been going for 15 years. And the biggest thing on Survivor right now, people are binge watching it. Going back to season one and binge watching on weekends. Fridays, we have Shark Tank, of course, and our new series, Beyond the Tank, which takes those stories out of Shark Tank and follows them up. And we have Fifth Graders back on, 500 Questions back on, AD is on, People's Choice Awards. What's that, 10 or something?
That's pretty impressive. And you mentioned, you know, number one on many days of the week. Real quick, you're kind of resurrecting the quiz format a bit. You mentioned Fifth Graders coming back, and you just concluded 500 Questions. Talk about that. And sort of, was the atmosphere ripe for the return of the quiz?
I really like game shows. Game shows are really great on a production level, because you can shoot multiple episodes per day. And by the way, the amount of calls I've had from cable channels in the last month looking for formatted shows is amazing. Like, clearly, the docu-soaps are working less and they're not repeating at all. So anybody here who's good at game, good at formats, you have a great chance, because things are cyclical. So I think formats are going to be very important. Game shows are great fun. You just got to make good stuff. How many times have people in this room heard from journalists, including not so much you, but journalists who are like...
Oh, I'll be cynical.
You are cynical sometimes. Listen, if you want to play in the big leagues, you got to take it on the chin. And you've slammed me a few times, but that's okay. We're good friends. But you know, hey, you got to take it. If you don't want to be getting criticized, don't do the job. You don't want a job where you have to live every morning when you get up, if you have enough shows, and check the ratings every morning and know whether you win, lose, or draw. It's like being in professional sports, right? You don't want to. You got to be willing to lose. But you know, I feel like game shows are really great fun, and I feel that it's a time for game shows to come back, because game shows are great utility players. That means a great game show, you can make a lot of them. That every channel, every network have shows they hope for that don't do well and have to replace. And the easiest replacement programming are game shows.
And obviously you can bring them back as Fifth Grader as an example of a format.
Yeah, long as it's good, in the end, you know, it's like I was saying about whether, some people saying whether reality shows are on the way out, which is a silly question. But a good cross-genre channel or network will have sports, news, scripted dramas, comedies, competition reality, docudrama reality. It'll have a bit of all of the above. Because if you put yourself into any one place and it starts going wrong, you're going to be in big trouble. You know, and so you've got to be willing. In the end, the other thing that's important, to get same-day ratings, events are very important. And we look at something like phenomenal numbers, like Discovery have done with the tightrope walking stuff. You know, it's big events can really rate well. One of the most watched things in recent years was a thing on Discovery Channel where they had the guy skydiving from outer space. You know, it got delayed 3 times, ended up going on 10 a.m. on a Sunday morning and did bigger numbers than the network programming. That shows you, if people want to find something, and due to social media they can, it can be on at any time. There's only one arbiter, guys. Is it any good? Is it noisy? Noise is important. No channel and no network have enough money to launch something by forcing it on the air by an ad spend. It needs to have a noisiness intrinsically built into it, and therefore a thing like this parachute from space, unfortunately for Discovery, it's not a repeatable series, which I specialize in, but as a special, did enormous numbers. It's got to be, like, in its core value. You know, you can always test ideas. If you're at dinner with someone or a group and you raise an idea, I always test my ideas at dinner parties. People will either hear the beginnings of an idea and lean in, and you can tell physiologically if what you're saying is compelling, or they'll lean back and they just glaze over and want you to finish, you know, and you realize that's not a good idea. Well, you do that 3 or 4 times, you have 4 different groups of people that lean in every time, you know, this is a cool idea. 3 or 4 times, people just don't, and they're not being rude. They're not going to say that's fucked up. They're going to just say that, they're not going to say anything, they're going to lean back. That's how you can test. You have to have noisy ideas that can do for the channel who are trusting you with their money. You have to be able to deliver something that the press will pick up on and talk about.
Right, there's a line, right? Because you mentioned Discovery, obviously they got dinged for the Anaconda stunt that they did in their last big special, and that sort of forced them to sort of dry in a little bit.
Yeah, but that was silly. I mean, that they should have gotten. I mean, like, you know, I'm sure Zaslav was kicking himself for that. But they still have to be noisy. Like, the Anaconda thing is silly. But a parachute drop from space or tightrope walk in the Grand Canyon, that's cool. And they're going to do another one of those, aren't they, in New York between buildings or something like that. But people like this stuff because there's a jeopardy there. It's a real jeopardy. You obviously hope the guy doesn't fall and die, but he's taking the risk. It's up to him, right? No one's making him do it.
I'm curious, you talked a little bit about docuseries. You haven't really done much in the docuseries space. Is there a reason for that? Is that just not something that interests you? Or, as we've seen lately, these shows can sometimes really implode if your star gets into trouble.
Yeah, that's not why. I haven't done it because I think I specialize more in network TV shows or big. And I also have a large foreign business from selling my formats. And I don't know how you sell a format of some docudrama. I don't think economically it's a good business. I mean, obviously people in this room, I'm sure, make money from it, but not the sort of money we need to make as a company. And so it's not a good economic plan for my business model. I mean, I've made one, but we made a very big one, Sarah Palin's Alaska for TLC, which was like still highest rated thing they've ever had. And, you know, I would do that again tomorrow. But it was timing. Sarah Palin at the time was in every piece of news you could possibly imagine. And when I went to Sarah, the first thing was no. And I explained, first of all, Sarah, I'm a very high quality producer. wouldn't do anything embarrassing or stupid. You're a mom. You're a good family, a special needs kid. There's nothing going to be embarrassing. It's nothing political. Hey, it's you and your family showing the world Alaska. Sarah Palin's Alaska. It was fun. I mean, honestly, I'll tell you right now, if I could produce any show, there's a number of ideas, any show right now, my short-term thing, I would love, and if he gets the news from this and calls me, I would love to do Vladimir Putin's Russia. So, President Putin, if you're hearing this right now from Real Screen, I would fly to Russia tomorrow, and it'll be nothing political. It's not like bash Russia. It's show us your beautiful country. I'd like to do Vladimir Putin's Russia. And Rob, would you put that on?
Well, Mark, okay,
As a result of that, I'm not going to sell that to Rob, and he'll be so sorry. Come on, who wouldn't? Tell me this. A show of hands, who would tune in to see Vladimir Putin's Russia?
Is he on a horse?
He'll be on a horse with his shirt off. He'll be playing ice hockey and scoring every goal.
I think Rob's turning around on this.
Special Forces Academy. But, you know, Russia, imagine going to St. Petersburg, you know, and seeing the incredible stuff of that city, going into the KGB Academy. Look, having Vladimir Putin show Americans the inside look at Russia, a country we only hear about through the lens of a news that we're given that we don't know is true or not. I'd like to see Siberia with him.
See, I think you started that as a joke, but you ended up actually pitching a pretty interesting show. So
no, it wasn't a joke. It wasn't a joke. Yeah. I really, really want to do this show. Does anybody here know Vladimir?
Well, funny enough, I mean, you've wanted to do a space race show for a while. You've come close a couple of times, and you've actually dealt with the Russians in the past for some of those shows. So maybe you put Vladimir Putin into space.
I'd rather go do an adventure show in Siberia and the history of St. Petersburg and KGB vaults and just stuff like that. But yeah, I've tried three times with space, put my own money up. First time I bought the rights to the Mir space station, and then it got deorbited. So there was no Mir space station. It splashed into the ocean. And then we had a deal to do the ISS. Mm-hmm. And then the space shuttle exploded. And then we recently had a deal with Richard Branson. And obviously there was an accident on that. What you learn from that is space is the real adventure. Space is the final frontier. And, you know, you start to respect how crazy it is where these cosmonauts and astronauts put their lives at risk to find new planets and do things. And I think putting an ordinary person in space, I'd love to be the person who did it. I've tried three times. I'll keep trying. And we do have a deal with Richard Branson. And as soon as Virgin gets back on track with NBC, we'll make that show. We have a deal with NBC for that show.
I want to put a coda on the discussion about the docuseries. Obviously, you alluded to the Duggar situation right now at TLC. Would you have done anything differently? Or do you think that show could continue? Or is that case of maybe you have to just cut bait?
No, I think Zaslav did the right thing pulling that off. Clearly, it's like an icky situation, to say the least. And it's the right and appropriate move to pull it off. A lesser company would have tried to profit from that, failing to realize how many people out there have been hurt, emotionally scarred through situations like this. And to profit from that would be outrageous. And I think they should be applauded for taking it off.
When Mark Burnett tells you to applaud, you applaud. Let's discuss the move into scripted. I mean, obviously, I remember, because again, I've been covering you for years. I remember Commando Nanny, of course, back at the WB, 2000, 2001. But really, things took off with The Bible. And, you know, 100 million viewers can't be wrong. Let's talk about that and the difficulty. If there was, would you say there was a difficulty in getting that off the ground? Sort of what sort of slam doors you had at first? What was it tough in selling Hollywood on doing a program about the Bible? And how did you work around that?
Listen, a lot of people in here are sellers, right? It's really hard. I mean, and all of us, we have to go out there and, you know, you got to pitch and you got to try and have a good idea and be enthusiastic and believe that you can deliver. And I have a lot of credibility. I made a lot of shows. And you should know, when I made Survivor 1, by the way, I remember Leslie Moonves giving me the green light. And I've been turned down once already on Survivor. And I went back and re-pitched Leslie. And he said, okay. And I had to sell some sponsors. I achieved that. He called me back in and said, okay, we're a go. You're going to make Survivor. I went out of his office, sat in my car, and had absolute terror. I had no idea, with the budget that he gave me, if I even knew what I was doing. And all my bravado suddenly was like, holy shit. I mean, they're really expecting 13 hours of network programming about surviving on an island, a game, and I don't even have an island. I sat for an hour in my car, and then I just decided, okay, this is when, you know, courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is being afraid and dealing with it anyway. Staying calm and logically thinking. And I immediately hooked up with Craig Piligian, great friend of mine, fantastic producer. And without Craig, there wouldn't have been a first Survivor. And together we thought it through, used the money wisely. And of course, Survivor in that first finale peaked at 72 million viewers and changed television as we know it. It was the most watched series since Sonny and Cher in 1973. I mean, think of that. Since 1973 and changed everything.
The floodgates opened after that. Yeah. Those were some heady times.
And so with that credibility and various things, when I decided to make the Bible, I went and pitched everybody. I think almost everybody, all the networks for sure, many cable channels, got many, many no's. I mean, clearly, anybody is going to hear a reasonable idea from me. I mean, they are, because it just behooves to at least know what I'm up to. I don't pitch that much, and I only pitch things I'm really, really want to make and feel certain I can make. And the only person that was an immediate yes was Nancy Dubuque, who bought it in the room and said, you know what, I've worked with you enough times, I know you're really good, I love the way you got the take on this, and this fits history. Because probably one of the biggest historical works in the world is the Bible. Huge audience that go to church every week. We will do this with you. And I walked out of there. And in that case, I was not scared. I'd taken 18 months to prepare my pitch. 18 long months. David Eilenberg, who now is at TBS and TNT, had worked with me, used to work for me at the time. I must have redone the pitch video, I'm not kidding, 30 times over 18 months until I knew congruently with my physiology. And congruency is that your intentions, your mind, your heart, your movement, everything is congruent. You believe what you can do and you know you can do it. I knew me and Roma could pull it off. Let's face it, there's not much bigger risks than the Bible. You could easily piss off billions of people by getting the Bible wrong, first of all. And Christians, I'm a Christian, but Christians make a sport out of criticizing other Christians. And I knew that. But fortunately, with the massive work that we put into it and the advisory teams, clearly we got the Bible right. And that also made a big change in television. 100 million viewers in America, in Canada. The Bible premiered opposite hockey, the first hockey game, and the Bible beat hockey.
God, hockey. Wow, that's tough for Canada. That's tough.
And God won. As well he should.
You're someone who really believes in broadcast TV. It's something that you really, you still love the draw, the reach of broadcast TV, and you're passionate about it. And it was important for you to take AD to a broadcast network. Talk about that in NBC and what the difference in experience in doing the follow-up at a broadcast network.
On the experience, No different experience. History Channel are really good. History Channel are very, very skilled, and as are NBC. And I think it's like all of us. Anyone here who's got great employees who work for them, what's the most stupid thing you can do? Is hire great people and then try and micromanage their work. The thing you need to do, which I do all the time, I hire people better than me and let them do their job. And in the case of great networks and channels like History and NBC, they understood that we knew what we're doing. And yeah, they have some ideas, but they let us go make it. And I've been very lucky, by the way. I mean, there's always notes on things. I mean, I want notes because, you know, if you don't get notes, you kind of miss things and you start get caught up in, you know, you drink your own Kool-Aid. But no one bothers us, and we just went away and made it. So the experience was not different of History and NBC. From an NBC perspective, we had a bigger budget and hired more experienced actors, you know, some very well-known actors. But it was both great experiences.
You know, something that's been very important to you and to Roma is faith. And I'm curious, talk a little bit about your path to that and how it sort of informs what you do for a living and how you've sort of it's become more important over the years as I've known you through the years. It's become much more of a driving force in your life and in your career. Can you walk us through how you sort of took that path?
Yes, well, it certainly didn't hurt marrying an angel.
Right. You were touched by an angel.
Many times.
I opened that up for
guys,
you.
We're married. We're married. It's okay.
It's legal.
Yes. For us, it's, you know, God is first. Our family is second. And our country is third. And
wait, where's TV?
It's nowhere. It's just a job. It's just a job. It doesn't come close to any of the other three. And we believe in God deeply. We try to pray every day. We seek God. We put God first. And if you look at all of our shows, every show we make, and we have, as a small company and relatively small company, we have more shows on air than any other company. And they're all family friendly. All of our shows are family friendly. You know what? That's who we are. I don't make anything my kids wouldn't want to watch. I don't make lowest common denominator stuff. And I think that's in the Bible about how to behave. And I try to follow that as best I can. I make mistakes all the time. You get second chances. And this is a nation of second chances. And this is a nation, just look at the money. It's one nation under God. And, you know, I respect all faiths. But God is, you know, and if you look at between, you know, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, it's the same God. And I think I'd encourage everybody here, the best thing you could do for yourselves in the morning, in the middle of your day, and at night, just take a few minutes of stillness. Because when you're so busy and you're going, it's another deal, and I've got another email to answer, and I've got another phone call to make in pursuit of work, and you have to work hard and be diligent. It'd be really great for you, though, just to be still. Be still and know that God is there. Just be still. And it can only help your life, help your family, help your business, and just be guided a little bit.
Is there anything maybe from early in your career that... you kind of look back now and perhaps cringe or yeah, maybe you wouldn't do it that way now.
Oh, I'm sure. There's shows that haven't worked and stuff, you mean? Yeah, sure. I mean, but you know, listen, Roma always laughs. You know, I've made shows that haven't worked, but people only talk about my hits. So I'm really sort of lucky. But you know, listen, here's the truth. It's like Rudyard Kipling with If, you know. If you can fill that minute with 60 seconds worth of effort. That's all you can do. And the biggest regret you'll have is not taking risks. It doesn't all work. You know, you have to look back. Would you rather have a bunch of things that didn't work, or would you rather have taken less risks and done nothing? You know, I would say this to you. Everyone's driven by one of two things, pretty much. It's the running towards pleasure or running away from fear. Think about that. You're either retreating from a fearful experience or you're running towards pleasure. And there's negativity in that. So you have to know who you are. Who I am is someone that runs away from fear. And what was my fear? My fear was and is of not making an impact, not making a difference. So for me, that meant the worst fear was doing nothing. Shows not working or getting rejected in pitches is no big deal to me whatsoever. What is a big deal is looking back 10 years later and feeling like a total piece of shit because I didn't make the effort. I don't want to look at my kids or look in the mirror at the person who didn't try because it seemed difficult. I am the person who got a gig, who didn't have an island, who took 180 people, which is now a crew of 600 now Survivor, 180 people who went over and made Survivor with almost no money, not enough camera crews, on an island with the avids on the island. I am the guy who got a yes from Nancy Dubuque to make The Bible, the scariest thing you could ever imagine making. You know, put yourself out there and say, Mark Burnett and Roma Downey present to you The Bible. But you know what? We did it. And we just had integrity and did the best. You know, making Ben-Hur. I mean, the only thing scarier than making Ben-Hur is Gone with the Wind, right? I'm literally making Ben-Hur. And you know what? It's great. And we stuck our neck out there. I don't want to look back and think when MGM came to me and said, do you want to make Ben-Hur? And I was like, yeah, but I'm too scared. You know, if you believe you have the ability, and by the way, what you learn on big productions, it's not me, is it? It's how I can manage to put together a team. Who's the director? Who's the DP? Who's the writer? And for example, Ben-Hur is written by John Ridley, who got the Academy Award for 12 Years a Slave. I mean, what a brilliant writer. What a privilege for me to work on Ben-Hur. But it comes down to, you've got to step up. You have to step up. You do not want to be the person who looks back in 10 years and had an opportunity come your way and you couldn't make it work because of your own fear. You have to decide what drives you. And my fear is the fear of looking back with regret that I didn't step up when I had the opportunity.
Talk about, your partnership with your wife, with Roma, has also sort of been fruitful in that you've got Lightworks Entertainment now, where you're doing much more faith and values entertainment. You did Dove Keepers for CBS earlier this year. What's the direction of that company, and do you think there's opportunity there that maybe others still haven't seen? You're talking about doing an OTT play, doing an over-the-top network. What are some of your plans and goals for the faith and values space?
Yeah, we're going to do a lot more. I mean, in terms of an audience size, the biggest underserved audience in the United States is the faith audience. 150 million Americans go to church on a monthly basis. 150 million go to actual church. 250 million self-identify as Christian. And there's not that much programming, you know. But by the way, there's a consequence. Big companies can misstep. Look at, you know, friends of mine who made Exodus, friends of mine who made Noah, they both lost a lot of money. Why? They changed the Bible. Who would go out there and make Shakespeare, going to make Romeo and Juliet and change the story? I don't think so. Well, the consequence of those giant feature films changing the story, they both failed. So you can't just make a biblical thing and not put in the work. It's massive work. For those of you, you know, who do a lot of work and get notes, by the way, we had 40 advisors on the Bible, 40 faith advisors, all sent every round of the script and got notes back from all of them. You imagine doing 40 sets of notes on the script each week. But you know what? That's why, on a biblical level, it was pretty perfect because we listened and it was real negotiation. You know, working with the Jewish community on Son of God. Roma and I received the Anti-Defamation League Award last year. Imagine being Christian producers doing the crucifixion of Jesus and receiving an award from the Anti-Defamation League. You know why? Because we worked with them tirelessly to make it as sensitive and non-offensive as possible. And You know, it can be done, guys. You know what you're hearing from me? I'm a very detailed person. If I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it properly. And you've got to be willing to do the work. You don't have to make the Bible. You haven't got to make Ben-Hur. But whatever you're doing, do the work. By the way, on the thing like the Dugars, clearly nobody knew that was happening. It's probably no one's fault. Things happen. And all you can do in those situations is, you know, hope the family are okay, hope the Dugar family are okay, and do what TLC did. You can't know everything and do everything right all the time, but you can make the effort.
A lot of these things, and we can, you know, Duck Dynasty controversy, sorry, Rob, falls under that as well, that these things turn political, and you don't want them to turn political, but that's the greater culture is they want to make it political. And you've worked with Sarah Palin, and of course Donald Trump is constantly saying things that upset you know certain people. But yet you've managed to walk that fine line.
Because,
how have you done that?
Listen, I grew up in England, Rome in Ireland. My family fought and died fighting the Nazis in the Second World War. I'm a veteran. I was in the British version of the Rangers and fought in war. And why these wars exist? War is terrible. For freedom. And this is the free kind of America, the land of the free, the land that we get to say what we want, we get to do what we want, and we shouldn't have any censorship, you know, and I really stand for that. And from a Donald Trump, Sarah Palin point of view, hey, it's a free country. And The Apprentice is amazing. I mean, The Apprentice is the biggest guilty pleasure in Hollywood. Trust me, if you knew the major league stars and producers and directors who never miss Celebrity Apprentice, you'd be shocked. No names to be mentioned, but you'd be shocked. It's like must-see viewing in Hollywood. And Donald's going to do what he wants. You know, I'm not part of that campaign. Sarah Palin can do what she wants. I want to tell you, by the way, Sarah Palin is one of the nicest people I've ever met. When I was filming Sarah Palin's Alaska, I remember we stopped filming and Sarah went back into her house and I followed her to say something to her. And she went into her living room and I was going to walk in and I stopped and I peeked around the corner and there was Sarah laying on the floor with her Down syndrome child, her son, playing beautifully, just loving, loving, loving that child. And I didn't film it and I just realized that's the mom. She's a real person. Yeah, she may have different politics and be forceful in certain things. But she's a great family person, and I love her. She's a great person. I don't have the same politics necessarily, you know, but it's a free country. It's what we fought for, right? That's what people are fighting for now, to allow Americans to be Americans. And remember this, by the way. America, the land of the free, is the country that props up the entire world. If the American government stopped giving money, if all of you stop being as generous as you are, the world falls apart. Our system of freedom and free values is what props up the entire world. And that's where Shark Tank plays a part. Shark Tank, by the way, $66 million has been invested by the sharks. $66 million and 10,000 unique brand new jobs have been created via Shark Tank. What a great thing for a TV show to do.
Mark, would you ever go into politics?
No. I've got a really big mouth, and I'm very I'm very forceful and aggressive, and I wouldn't be very good at keeping my mouth shut.
Let's talk about 15 years, 15 years of Survivor. Actually, I mean, it's what's interesting about the unscripted space is that several of the big formats, there's some real longevity with these shows. We're kind of in uncharted territory.
Yes.
To some degree, I know to the frustration of probably some in this room, the veteran shows have crowded out, maybe some would argue, opportunities for new shows, but these shows are still working. Can you talk about that? And is it just the simple fact that these were the first
but,
in?
But it's not. But if you look on cable, for example, you look at things like the Dugars. Wasn't that 10 years on the air? I think the Dugars were 10 years. Right? Gold Rush on Discovery. You know, I'm sure Duck Dynasty is going to be 10 years. Survivor's 15 years. Dancing with the Stars. The Bachelor. Apprentice.
Yeah, no, these are all franchises that
I'm
are
about to make Voice Season. I'm making Survivor Season 32. I'm saying making Apprentice Season 15. I'm making Voice 9, Shark Tank 7. You know, so if you look at my shows plus other shows. So what's the commonality? They're all really good. The Bachelor is a really good show. Dancing with the Stars is a really good show. You know, so you look at, you know, certain shows, surprised they went away. Like Extreme Home Makeover, I wish that was my show. What a great show. That went off the air, but that could be brought back tomorrow. It's a good show. Someone should bring that back. So in the end, it doesn't matter, guys, whether it's comedy scripted, drama scripted, competition reality, docu-soap, is it good? That's the only thing that matters. And the only overlay there is it noisy? Can you get press? Can you get guys like this to write about it? Because he has to, because it's unique and interesting. Because if you're relying upon the GRPs of the channel and the off-network spend, good luck. It's not enough to galvanize an audience that have got so many devices. We as humans in America are bombarded with over 5,000 messages a day. When you go out here, you see billboards, you see bus shelter signs, your phone lights up, your laptop lights up, you know, you see commercials on TV. To try and break through the clutter, it better be something really unique. Obviously, the Bible is something that can break through. Survivor broke through. You know, Shark Tank took 2 years, by the way. ABC kept with it with low ratings and it caught fire. And now Shark Tank is definitely must-see Friday viewing. But you've got to find something that has something about it that's bigger than the show itself.
Well, it's interesting in scripted television, once a show, quote unquote, jumps the shark, it's kind of impossible to bring it back. But we've seen several unscripted shows sort of have a rough patch. The Bachelor being a good example. That show is hotter than ever, but it had a rough few years. Celebrity Apprentice, that's a show that almost went off the air, but it came roaring back. Is there a secret to rejiggering these shows, or is it all in the casting, or is it just simply timing?
It's format, you know. Apprentice is a perfect format. Apprentice, we're making it in 40 countries. It's like the number three show still in England. Came on here, did a 2.0 last year here. It's all in the formats. And really, really being focused with your team of, you know, I think of it like this. Imagine if everyone in this room, we all became, going back, throwback, board game makers. Remember board games? Maybe some people still play board games with their families. Not enough, probably. But board games that work had really simple rules, very clear rules, had a jeopardy, an excitement, a chance to get ahead quickly or fall back, like Monopoly, Snakes and Ladders. These things are board games with rules. That's all we're doing. If you make competition unscripted television, you're like a board game maker. You know, and the format is what more. The Bachelor has a great format. That's why it's still doing great. And yes, I suppose those of us who are fortunate enough to own several of these franchises do crowd out stuff. But let me tell you something. Everybody wants the next hit. I don't know what it is, but what's exciting about this business is that if you have the next hit, Rob wants to hear it. Leslie Moonves wants to hear it. And it can come from anybody. I, who put Survivor on, it was my first network show. I never made a network show before. I mean, my wife, as you know, is an actress. You know, when we got together, her actor friends were like, I can't believe you're dating him. He's the guy that put us all out of work. You know, so from an actor, writer, boy, I'm on both sides of the fence. I'm making scripted and unscripted. But you know what? Any of you can have the next big hit. It's just having the right idea and being able to also, here's a little tip from me for what it's worth. Every time you can ask anyone who buys shows, I'm the guy who comes in, I'm leaving their office in 20 minutes. If I'm coming for a pitch, I'm only staying longer than 20 minutes if they invite me and have 100 questions. Otherwise, I'm leaving. And because if you can't explain your show and you can't excite people with your enthusiasm, your physiology, and it's a clear idea with a beginning, middle, and end, then you are a loser. And you're wasting their time, and their time is valuable. And the reason I can go and pitch anybody I want, they don't buy every show, but I'm never, ever wasting their time. They're all looking for a hit. You just need to be really good at pitching. You know what, you have to think you're talking to kids. If you were pitching a 10-year-old, you're telling a story, like a bedtime story. That's how a pitch should be. You know, it really, and honestly, nothing more annoying than a 40-minute pitch that at the end of it, I'm no clearer what the show is than when I first met the person. And like, that's a great way to never get invited back into a cable channel or a network.
Your phone is blown up right now. Everyone wants to hear this Putin pitch that you've got. So
honestly, I would, seriously, that would be so... listen, Rob's going to call me after and say, I was just kidding, buddy. I was just kidding. Because let me tell you, if Sarah Palin's Alaska did 3 million viewers a week, right? 3 million viewers, which is a huge number for TLC. Vladimir Putin's Russia. Sarah Putin's Russia. There's a show. Would be huge numbers.
My final question, though, American Idol. Are you surprised that they're shutting that down after next season? As the executive producer of The Voice, were you dancing?
I'm so glad.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad because when I put The Voice on, the amount of people, including you, by the way, who said, "Come on, how can America support a third music show? There's Idol. X Factor just started, and now you're going to put on a show, and in your show, there's not even any criticism of the singers." And I said, "This. I've seen this show in Holland. It's called The Voice of Holland. This is brilliant. My kids watched it in Dutch and were captivated and don't obviously speak Dutch. This show works, and I'm going to get huge stars. Not people who were singing stars, current huge singing stars, and this show will outlast." And I remember people saying, well, you know, after Voice started getting traction, people said to me, should Idol and X Factor be afraid of The Voice? I said, no, actually. Now they've moved to Wednesdays, they should be very afraid of Survivor. And people were like, yeah. People were like, yeah, right. And of course, the seasons began. Survivor was much lower than those shows. And by episode 6, Survivor had overtaken them. And Survivor ended up doubling them. And both X Factor and Idol are off the air. And Survivor is healthy, and The Voice is healthy.
Do you worry at all that next season's going to be all about the end of Idol, and so the story will become the end of music competitions, and do you think that might actually reflect negatively on The Voice? Do you any sort of effect on that?
Listen, you're asking questions as an interviewer. You know, and I know, because you're an expert. The Voice is not going anywhere. Young America love The Voice. Young America loves The Voice. And The Voice is, it just speaks to young America. You know, we have such current music on that show that my team is so good. Some of the songs you hear, if you notice, when we do the blinds, you're hearing songs that are just breaking on radio. That's because this team are finding songs right now that are about to break, and we're having those songs done in blind auditions that are not even out yet. When we tape it, and we're breaking those songs. So we have a mix of show songs that college kids are listening to that no one in this room has even heard of, probably, unless there's young people in this room. There's a few young people. But most people in this room haven't got a clue about any of this music. But we also, for everyone else, we have great classics. You know, we've really great classics where, you know, real rockers are on the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Burnett. Mark, thanks so much. This was a great talk. And that's it for this bonus edition of The Spinoff. I'm Michael Schneider of TV Guide Magazine and TVInsider.com. You can find me on Twitter at Franklin Avenue. This podcast is produced by Caitlin Parker, and Melissa Morton is our technical director. You can hear past episodes of The Spinoff on iTunes, Stitcher, and pretty much everywhere you can download podcasts. You can hear it online at kcrw.com and on demand with the KCRW smartphone app. Until next time, this is The Spinoff, signing off.